When it comes to having to deal with smokes, obviously, I only care about that in Counter-Strike, don't I, where people like Stewie2K and or whatever. I mean, retired, so shout out Flusher. You were pretty good with them too. They're just so annoying, aren't they? The way they play around smokes, the way they're inside them, are they outside of them? Is this smoke going to hurt? Is it going to help me? Is it actually blocking a spot off? Well, when it comes to enjoying cannabis products, what an obvious segue. I would actually like it to be where you weren't irritated by smoke. You could just actually see the smoke, but know that it's being cooled appropriately using products you may have purchased to support this network. And in doing so, you can just enjoy the yummy THC chemical that goes into your brain and then tells you, haha, that's right, this cartoon is funnier than you thought. That's right, Limp Bizkit are actually virtuoso musicians who defied societal norms and sort of were in some ways poets, you know, the way they would express themselves. Basically, to enjoy the freeze pipe, you don't have to agree with me that Limp Bizkit are genius musicians of their age. But all I'll say is, if you know how to use a freeze pipe, you might end up agreeing with me, because all you do is you take out the food safe glycerin chamber, put it in the freezer section for 1 hour. That's about enough time to listen to Significant Other, the second in the oeuvre of Limp Bizkit, of their albums that they brought out. And then after you've listened to that, you can then smoke using the freeze pipe glycerin chamber. It will cool the smoke by over 200 degrees. Obviously, we're doing Fahrenheit American there, because if that was Celsius, that'd be mental, wouldn't it? But it'd be an interesting sci-fi movie if it did make it minus 200 degrees Celsius. But after that, then you just get to enjoy the same cannabis, but without the annoying hot smoke that irritates your lungs. You just get to actually enjoy the chemicals, do whatever you want with the rest of your day. If that sounds like a good idea to you, they also have other products like the vape pen, where you can put the cartridges and have no smoke at all. They have the little blunt tip that you put in for 20 minutes, then you can smoke a blunt or a joint from it. Use the code LFN for 10% off at thefreezepipe.com. Thank you to thefreezepipe.com. Right, let's get into this one, guys, because obviously now we are going to spit hot fire. We're going to do the hot takes as usual. So here's the thing. I think we need to vary it up a bit, because on all the last ones, we start out, we've almost like spoiled ourselves. We're starting out with such tepid takes at the beginning that they like eventually they get really spicy. So I want people to be on their A game today. I want you to, we'll mix up the order. I want the people to hit me with their best take first of all. I want to start with some heat and see what we're cooking with here. So then I can see if we can one up it and go higher. So does someone have a spicy opening take for us?
Yeah, I got one. I got a pretty good general one that's about just the game itself. And I really actually believe this. I'm not even just making this up for the show. I actually think that.
What? Wait a minute, Bobby. What do you mean? Making takes up for this show?
Yeah. But my bad. Right
there. Everything we say on here is just a manifesto of what we believe, and we should be absolutely reviled for it forever, some would say. You know.
Making
things
up?
Hit us on hook.
Okay. So that I think that introducing skins into CSGO was the worst thing that Valve has ever done in terms of making this esport as good as it can possibly be. Because we know now at this point that according to CSGO case tracker, people opened 39.5 million cases in March of this year, which is over $100 million that Valve earned in that year. There are only 360 employees at Valve. Do the math. Like, this company is just, like, they're literally spawning money. And so what is it of any use to them to actually make great games anymore?
Oh, so they're not incentivized to make the esports side because they make too much from cases, is the argument, right?
Yes.
Right,
exactly.
Okay, I see where you're going. Right.
Yeah, so I do not think that there's any reason for Valve to actually, like, everybody has been bootlicking so hard on Twitter.
It's wild,
about,
isn't
like,
it?
It's crazy that it's gotten to a point where you can't even be critical about what's going on in CS2. It's a beta. Like, you're supposed to give this kind of open feedback, and people are almost like, oh my god, if you yell at Valve, they're gonna take our toys away. And it's just so ridiculous the level that it's gotten to at this point. And the thing is that, in all honesty, Valve doesn't have to even care. They don't even have to lift a finger. They shouldn't even really care if all they care about is profits. The only thing that we have to hold on to is the fact that Valve are actually in some ways benevolent, because they are giving us some sort of update to this game that we know and love. They are actually trying to make it into a better system. And it's almost just like a passion project for them. And that to me is actually why for them, the skin cases, the fact that we have this secondary market that is just printing money for them, that's doing so much good for them in terms of their finances that at this point, like, they don't really actually have to make this game good. They can just, and that's why overall making skins has in a lot of ways made it so Valve doesn't even have to work nearly as hard, and yet they're still going to make money. And so for them, CS in general is just a passion project.
Oh, man. My answer to that is, who the fuck cares how much money they make? I don't. Like, they made the game free, right? Didn't they?
So anybody can,
yeah. Anybody can play the game. Anybody will be able to play the CS2. So they found a way to make shit tons of money, and I applaud them. Applaud them. They should. If I would do the fucking same thing, if I was in their position. I have my own hot take when it comes to Valve and decision making and all these things, which we're going to get into a little bit later. But when it comes to money and making money, I mean, what's the opposite like of not having skins and not making money that way? You know, in Dota, they still have the skins. They still have all these things. They made, again, millions over millions over millions when it comes to the micro, you know, transactions and everything that goes with it. So why not in CS? People are enjoying skins. Yes, we have the dark, shady side of gambling and all these things that happened in the past, and that's fine. Like, I mean, there is no regulatory body to fix these things, to deal with these things, and so what? But the thing is, like, if they didn't do that, how would they make money from CS? By selling the game, $10 a piece? I don't think that would be enough money. Because you are not counting the expenses they have. You're not counting the countless servers, the taxes they're paying, all the shit they have to do in order to keep this thing running. So them making money on cases, what did you say, like $100 million in this year?
In a month?
Who the fuck cares? Get them get billions. I don't care. That doesn't affect me whatsoever. We are, because of their game, because of their product, we are making tens of thousands of dollars a month, right? Here, when we talk about Counter-Strike, we make content about Counter-Strike, so fucking what? Let them make their money. They found the model. Yes, is it perfect? No, not at all. They can do better. They must do better in some aspects of the whole model that they are providing. But saying, like, punishing them, you know, for making hundreds of millions of dollars for absolutely no reason. I don't agree with that. But the thing is, like, if they how do you think they're gonna take away our toys if we yell at Valve? They're gonna take away their own money? Who does that? Like, we can sit here and spit fire on them. What are they going to do? Say, no more game for you, which means that, you know, by extension, no money for them, right? Who the fuck wants that? So they're going to let us yell. They're going to let us say things like, this is shit, this is bad, this map is crap. But they're not going to care. They're going to fix a little bit here, fix a little bit there. I do agree with you. Maybe it's not their main project. Maybe it's their, like, hobby kind of thing, but they're still making a lot of money. They're going to be making it for the next 20 years at least. So let them make it. As long as the game is there, as long as, like, the events are happening, as long as there are, like, new players, talents, everything is going on that we love and enjoy and make money off every single day.
I'm sort of in the middle on these two, because, like, on the one hand, I actually think Maui's initial take is sort of right, as in, I do think, unfortunately, that one of the main reasons why Valve does just exist like some sort of, like, emperor that no one can talk to, and they either just, like, radio silent for years at a time, or they just, like, deign to speak to us peon peasant serfs and be like, there you go, have a few coins and a little fare or something. The reason they can do that is because they essentially do, as we say in English, make money hand over fist. They just make, they have, like, an infinite money glitch printer called skins that they just decide, like, the joke is they don't even maximize that. Like, everyone's begged them for years for operations and new skins, and teams have been like, please let us make the skin for you and then just take your cut, and they don't even do it because, again, they're making so much money through essentially, like I say, like, an infinite money glitch in the world that they don't need to. They actually sort of 4 key are on some like Chinese government shit of like, I think we've made enough for now, so just don't bother with that project anymore. Like, what? Like, that's not even capitalism. So the funny thing is, I sort of agree with Mary on that. Like, they're not in a traditional market system where the notion is market forces incentivize hopefully what you want if you planned it, or just whatever they do incentivize. Essentially, they're not incentivized to actually make the esport good. In fact, you can even argue the opposite. You can actually argue they're actually incentivized to make the game as casual as possible, and to make it, and sometimes if that means at the expense of the esport, say fuck the esport. It's actually one area where we'll give a slight bit of credit to Valve. Sometimes I think they have made decisions that they could have gone the other way and made plebs and little shitter silver players happy, but actually they didn't, and they did things that maybe the pro scene would prefer. But the reason why I sort of also agree with Gassad is the problem is, I don't unfortunately think it was either or. Like, the whole reason they didn't put a lot of their weight behind CSGO early is because there wasn't something like skins. That really was sort of what sort of like made it viable as a game and an esport. Like, before that, there's a reason it was floundering a little bit as a game. And quite frankly, if you pause right before that operation with all the skins in 2013, if you pause and ask Valve which makes more sense to work on, CSGO or Dota, I'm pretty sure they'd all just say Dota. Like, it was just a way more viable approach. It was a bigger esport even. So on that, on the unfortunate thing is this though, Maui, essentially I don't actually think if there wasn't skins that they then would put the same like effort into the thing. But I sort of agree overall, because one thing I do despise is I actually do think it's a very immature mindset. I know it's kind of like the American ethos, but where people think everything's just about money. It's just about whether you made money. And if you made money, it's justified. And if you didn't, you know, what are you wasting your time for? Like, to me, money's like a side thing in life. It's like you need enough of it to do things and to buy things and to create opportunities. But ultimately, the main reason to do something is still like, it's your art, it's a craft, it's something you enjoy, it's something excellent, and then hopefully you make money along the way, and if you do it well, you can do both at the same time, can't you? So my problem is, I have always hated the idea that we just rely on the benevolence of Valve, basically, and the fact, and the notion, which we all just accept, but I actually don't think it's ever been proven, that they really care about the competitive side of CSGO. I don't believe they do. I think, if you ever look at even how they message, I don't think they think of majors as world championships in a circuit that has spot. You know, like how we think of it, like, right, it's like, it's what like Nico and Simple need to win at the end of their career. I think they just think of it as, it's a cool tournament we put on for the best players, and you could win if you're good enough for many. I think they're on some more like casual, almost like mainstream media tip of like just thinking it's some celebration of Counter-Strike or something, even though to me it's supposed to be, like I say, like the Super Bowl, basically. It's supposed to be like your biggest competitive moment. So the one thing I would say is this, I did have a line similar for many years, Maui, which is, I think it was in like 2015 when there was first a report that said, like, you know, if in a year they'd made like something meant like 2 billion revenue from skins, etc. When I read that, I remember just thinking, well, that's a black pill, isn't it? Because if they make billions of dollars each year and they haven't changed certain things, whatever will incentivize them to change that? Like, what, do they need trillions? Like, remember, dude, if people don't get it, it wasn't that many decades ago. Like, billions was the entire market cap of all gaming in the whole world. This is one video game that originally was made by some dude in a bedroom making billions of dollars from in-game items for the company that owns it. And in fact, they don't even have to update it. It's not even like a League of Legends or Valorant where you're making the new characters. And you're not even doing stuff half the year. You're just being chilling, just fucking scooping money into a Scrooge McDuck giant vault, it feels like. Obviously, I'm doing a caricature, but that's what feels like they're doing. So, and also, I agree on the beta topic completely. The real joke is the only beta I've seen is all the fucking industry people on Twitter. Holy shit, you guys are simping hard. Holy fuck. What's mad is, keep that same energy. I tell you what, pro player, keep that energy when you go to an event and the game starts 1 hour later. You have a fucking tantrum. The joke is the TO and your team org lose money so you can have the game. Valve make billions and then you kiss their feet when they don't even do something good. Like, what's mad is, people are so cocked that the same people, like I'm saying, will nitpick anything. They'll go like, yeah, I guess the spray's a bit fucked. What, the fundamental way of firing the gun in Counter-Strike doesn't work and you're just making that like a minor thing? I guess it's a bit fucked at the moment. What are you talking about? You would go, what would the equivalent of that be? That would be like going to an event in Katowice and it turns out they accidentally put you like in a river. You're not even on land at that point. Like, oh, well, you know what? They'll fix the environment for the event. What are you talking about? Like, and then I agree, Maui, the way they make it sort of sound like, shh, Valve's sleeping and if they wake up, they're going to be really mad and leave and go to Dota. It's like, they are making billions of dollars. Like, they aren't, they're not doing this as a favor for you and me, guys. In fact, I always say this, if you know notice I'm actually one of the few people who goes like right at Valve's head. I don't even do that thing of like thanks, to, like Cassard does. Like, and now we get the opportunity. Mate, they don't give a fuck about me and you. They never helped me and you make this money. The opportunity exists, you're right, because of their game. Me and you did all the rest. We had to grind. We had to do all that shit. We had to get our spot. By the way, sometimes you can even argue in spite of Valve. Like, I don't necessarily know this for a fact, but I doubt they were loving me after that kind of eating shit. I imagine part of them was like, maybe we don't want to see him at majors after that, you know. So
yeah.
I think that whole topic's like a complicated one, because I actually think you should go the opposite personally. I think because they do make absurd amounts of money, and more importantly, they need the esports scene, not for money, like we said, but for like for credibility, for like essentially we are like running the scene for them. They're not doing it all like League of Legends. I do think that people shouldn't be scared to go at them when there's problems with the game and bug issues or no access for people. I do think that whole thing where people are like, hey guys, it's just a beta, like that is just, it's so feckless, mate. It's like, especially because like I say, none of those people have that energy for anyone else. They're nitpicking the fuck out of everyone else and going mad on, like they'll go mad on the most minor thing ever on a website or a journalist, but you're gonna go fucking and carry infinite at water for Valve. I think that's a bit whack personally.
Nah, but the thing is, like, what I want to say is, well, yes, they make a lot of money, right? That's fine. They can share a little bit of it to the community, not in a sense that, you know, they just give away money. Maybe invest something in one of the companies. It doesn't have to be Blast or ESL or whatever, right? Invest in somebody who's going to develop an academy scene in North America.
Dude, all like, I ask them is this. I'm like you. I don't mind them making money. In fact, what I would always say to them is this. I don't even want to give out. I'm not like those people like, just give us money. No. Just give us an opportunity to make the money. That's all I ask for. Like, you know, give us a case. Give us like skin technology. If someone can be creative, because one thing we have infinite people in esports, like artists and people cool ideas, give those people a way to make money that, like you're saying, the profit, some of it goes to Valve, they make their cut, and then the rest, like you're saying, goes into a program like a We Play Academy type thing.
Yes, can be absolutely funded. Yeah. What's a couple of million to them, you know, based on just from that revenue to invest in an academy program, right? In North America academy program sponsored by Valve with the third party that's going to be executing that stuff, right? The same thing in Asia, the same thing in the Oceanic region. It doesn't have to be, right, some sort of super mega exclusive, but they can share them. But yes, I agree with that. But also, I don't think people are reaching out to them whatsoever. They speak about Valve and all this shit through Twitter. Who the fuck gives a shit about Twitter? I challenge you, Maui, right here on the show. One thing, you are now back in America, right? Okay. You are now back in New York. If you have ideas, now this is a win-win for you. I can't win in this one, so you can win both ways. So if you have ideas, and I'm sure you do, about the game, about the economy, about the money, whatever it is, because you're obviously thinking and doing the research, right? So how about you reach out to somebody from Valve outside of Twitter account? Somebody from and say, listen, I want to stop by your office for a meeting to see, like, you are a, you know, public figure in this scene, right? As well as Duncan, as well as me and a bunch of other people, but you are in America. If they say yes to meet with you and discuss about the current state of the game and the future of CS2, I will pay your ticket to Seattle and back. The return ticket to go there. So make up your mind, set down set of questions, topics that you want to talk to them, reach out to them, and I'm sure they will answer one way or the other. And if they say, yeah, come by, see our offices for a little bit, maybe we can talk or whatever, I'll pay your ticket, you go there and you tell us on the next or whatever show what they said. Because I don't think people are reaching out the right way. They're just speaking about shit on Twitter and Reddit and all this crap, right? And I do think Valve, like Duncan said, they're reacting only when maybe the money starts dropping off a little bit, when things get a little bit out of control, they step in, like with this partnership program, right? Because nobody liked it. They didn't like it. We complained about it millions of times. The competitive scene has been dropping off, so you can't say they don't give a shit about competitive scene whatsoever. You know, they could do more, but they are starting to do more. They recognize after a couple of years of this partnership bullshit that it cannot longer be a case anymore, so they have to stop it from the 2025, which will be the year where CS2 is in full swing one way or the other. So that's my challenge to you, Maui. So if they say no, you win, right? Because you can say like, fuck you, Cassad, you are wrong, yeah, I'm right, they don't give a shit about us. And if they say yes, then you go and speak to them and see what they say. Maybe you get a better understanding, and maybe we get a better understanding of what happened. And
I like the way what Kassad's doing here,
and you get a free flight.
What he's doing here, he's sort of sending you like the messenger between ancient kingdoms, and either you come back and they agree to your terms, or they just cut your head off and your body rides back. And then we're like, right, it's war with Valthin. Okay, so I don't know why it has to be you specifically. It's because you're in America, apparently. So it's like a modern Teesside. You're the closest to that spot. We're pivoting to the other site, so you're the entry.
I'm entry bragging.
So you also have cheap flight tickets from New York to Seattle. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's actually a great idea, and actually reaching out to Valve is something that I actually wouldn't be opposed to doing or anything like that. I guess just to sum up the point as a whole is just that the main idea behind me saying that is that generally with just markets and just how they're structured, you would hope that there is, in some sense, perfect competition. And for Valve, in a lot of ways, there simply is no market incentive for them to actually work on the game, which generally does drive innovation, despite what people say about capitalism and economics in general. But with Valorant having come out, and like in a lot of ways, with Valorant coming out, there was a little bit of a pushback between both of those two teams, Riot and Valve, when that was starting. Like, you know, obviously Valorant was copying Counter-Strike as a whole, but then Valorant copied a couple things from Valorant. Like, for example, the fact that you can right click a person's name in the scoreboard and copy their crosshair. That's something Valve stole from Valorant back. But there's not really a true market competition, the term is perfect competition. That doesn't really exist between Valve and Riot, which does breed innovation and does breed them actually having to exercise more effort to make the game better. Because when the market actually isn't about the game itself, but it's about the skins, that to me is what this whole thing is about, where it's just that really the game isn't even the product anymore. It's the skins themselves.
All right, I've got one. This is an interesting one because it is, by all definitions, a hot take. It's even one where, like, I don't totally agree with it myself. Again, to spoil the kayfabe, spoiler, the point of this show is to craft a hot take. You don't always have to totally believe it. But I think the premise is legit. It's one of those ones where it's like the ultimate point is one I think a lot of people will agree with. It's just there's no real way to make it actually work logistically. So here's the hot take. It's going to sound like I've actually just taken this straight from HLTV.org forums. Are you ready? The Intel Grand Slam, even though it is the Intel Grand Slam, needs to actually include majors that aren't run by ESL. Now, the reason why that, look, you're all going to go, that's not even a hot take. We all agree. No. I understand business-wise that is suicide if you're ESL. Like, the whole point is, one, you don't want to ever acknowledge to your main sponsor of your company that your rival is important and viable in the scene. And two, the sponsor themselves, Intel, don't really want to give away $1 million in part because you won a tournament that has nothing to do with them or their sponsorship. So the problem is, for both ESL and Intel, it sucks. The issue is, for us, observers of the game, and for players, it would be almost inarguable the best result, because basically, and I've got a counterintuitive reason why it wouldn't be that bad for ESL, but here's how it goes. First of all, in terms of history, it almost works now because Cologne and Katowice are so important. But the problem is, when you have years like we're having at the moment where ESL doesn't run a major, and that's going to happen sometimes because of how good Cologne and Katowice are, that they don't have to have a major, it just means it gets awkward. Like, that was awkward where FaZe won Antwerp, but it didn't have any relevance to the Grand Slam or not, even though they had won a major. So there's a world where they didn't complete the Grand Slam, even though they had a major, which is like, that's weird because it doesn't make the accomplishment work as well as it could. Whereas if it included all majors, you don't have to include Blast World Finals, but if it included all majors, it would make it a lot like cleaner as an accomplishment. And I think a lot of people now have come around to my side, not just because of Team Liquid, which is that the Grand Slam on its own is a brilliant accomplishment. Like, obviously we all get that the major in theory is the thing you want to win, but after a major, Grand Slam's a baller accomplishment too, because you almost, I know there've been the online ones, but you almost can't like win a shit Grand Slam, if you know what I mean. Like, every Grand Slam on some level was hard and did involve playing the best teams and was like a legit accomplishment because you had to at least win four tournaments, even if some of them were online. Now, the reason why it's not totally a stupid concept though is because this is how I would argue it to ESL. Like, I don't know if you could get through Intel. That's why it might be logistically impossible. Here's what I would say to ESL though. If you're ESL, counterintuitively, it's actually smart to include your opponent's major, because in doing so, you actually co-opt his narrative. So as a result, all, like the Blast one's the perfect example. If now Vitality won one more, let's say you count Gamers 8 as well, I'm just doing a random one just for an example here. If Blast counted, even though it's not ESL, so they had one event left to go and then they win, then even though you didn't run the Blast Major, it actually then becomes like a block, a Jenga block within a bigger narrative. That is your narrative, which is the Grand Slam. So in a way, you actually cleverly make it so that someone winning your opponent's event counts to their storyline within your circuit. So I think basically that's why, as a completist, I think it would just be better for history. It would make it a cooler accomplishment because it would mean all majors are viable in this sense. Whereas instead, essentially, it's actually harder to win a major like FaZe did because the one year they did it, well, they did have an ESL major, but they blew that one. They didn't. The one that they won wasn't the ESL major. Actually made winning their Grand Slam harder than if it had been the IM Rio they'd won instead. So, yeah, that's my take. Basically, like I said, it starts off like a really bad HLTV take, but I think there's a point to it.
Is this your, like, the hottest
take? No, there's more I can comment.
Didn't you say yeah, but I'll start off with the big one?
Not for everyone. Maui started with... Sorry,
here, I got a response to this.
I got to do it, but you go for it.
Okay. I would say that actually this is... I there's something about this where I would include the majors into the Intel Grand Slam circuit, but I would actually not include the Blast Finals, first of all, because if you started including those, it would actually raise the prestige of the Blast events. But I actually think that because they're too closed of a circuit and there's only the two open slots via showdowns, I actually think that it could potentially ruin a team like Ence's chances of making a Grand Slam, because then a team that just is part of the Blast partnership would have such a higher likelihood of making it. So like a team like G2 or FaZe, for that matter, would have such a better chance. Another thing is that, though, with this, is that I actually think this would be a great sponsorship opportunity for Intel, because if you're just parading the gold bars around to all these majors too, what are you doing? You're just like, everybody's like, oh, yo, it's the guy with the bars, with the white gloves, you know, like he's actually here at the event. And if this goes their way, then imagine the fact that there's going to be the big trophy lift at, say, a place like the Blast Paris Major, and then the guy just opens up that Intel labeled box, gives them the gold bars right there on the stage too. It's a sponsorship segment. And if you're a TO like Blast, you do need to coordinate something with Intel that's like, you're not really our main sponsor, but for you to do this, we're going to have some sort of margin cut here. But with Intel, then you get to actually steal a little bit of that limelight at the end, that, hey, there's this big trophy that's on the line and there's our gold bars. So it adds prestige to the moment.
You guys are nuts, dude. Like, if you think that's ever going to be a thing, like, that can never be. Just imagine ESL.
He's making the case it was a hot take here. All I'm saying, Maui, is he started off like, you don't even know hot take. You're fucking crazy. Come on, hit me with it. Hit me with the full Serbian rap. Come on.
Just imagine this situation, right? Like, ESL comes in with Intel and Extreme Masters, and you win Kato, and you win Cologne, and you win IEM, whatever, right? And then all of a sudden, the team with three victories goes to the fucking Banana Cup Blast Major in Paris. Runs through into the breach.
Wait a minute. Even though you're just putting it aside, like, listen, you can't actually call the Blast Major Banana Cup. It was a major with all the best teams that come. That one's too far. Listen, I know the other Blasts are bananas. I'll give you that one. There's no way the major was a Banana Cup.
They fucking run to the into the breach, Apex and Gamer Legion.
That's not their fault, is it?
They won the three ESL events, IEMs, and then the Intel comes in with a gold bar and a fucking plastic trophy for the major and gives them the fucking five golden fucking nuggets or whatever the fuck is it, and then ESL is just holding their dick. He's like, they won the Grand Slam on Blast event.
Well, I appreciate Maui.
Fucking happen.
Is he doesn't even mean that by the way, Blast Paris Major was a Banana Cup, so pretty bang a hot take. But the problem is, Kassad doesn't believe it as a hot take, Maui. He actually believes it is a foundational paradigm of Counter-Strike. Like, to him, it's actually just like, it's just taken for granted. It's a Banana Cup Major.
Yes.
I love the idea of majors.
The level of organization, that is just like, it's crazy.
I love it.
But that's a different topic. But imagine the third victory as FaZe, as G2, or Ents. You win it in Cologne and everybody's happy, and then you win it in fucking Blast and you lift $1 million. Yes, Intel sponsorship, but just where does that leave ESL and their whole product and idea? Never going to happen. You guys are insane. That's just
why it's a hot take.
That's a dump take. That's nothing. It's never going to happen.
Oh, well, go then.
It's bad. Well, I'll say this. It's bad. It's not good publicity for ESL for it to be one not at an ESL event, but it's good publicity for Intel, and it is the Intel Grand Slam, not the ESL Grand Slam. So,
well, if I'm ESL and Intel comes to me and is like, hey, we want to expand this to Blast, I would say just make it a blasting. Blast Intel Grand Slam. See if they take it. You know, never going to happen. There is not a universe.
Just rename it. The Intel Blast Banana Bunch. There you go. If you win four bananas, then you get
four bananas. It's yellow. It's exactly. Gold. Somewhere there, right? But the thing is, never going to happen in a million years unless ESL buys Blast and they make it like work together. So, I mean, it can happen. So
the Intel fruit salad.
Intel salad, banana split, whatever, yeah.
Right, only thing is now, Kassad, you have essentially put all the pressure on yourself now, because your take better be fucking flames, mate. Come on.
No. The thing is, I'm going to start slowly.
Oh, okay, I see how it is. Okay.
No,
okay.
You guys focused on Valve and Intel and all these things, and nobody focused on the real things, like the players, the teams. So the first take.
Right, what's Nico doing now that you're interested in? Go on, hit me with it.
Oh, I actually met him yesterday in the restaurant with Monesi. He told me a little secret, but I'm not going to say it. But the thing is, if Keiserato doesn't leave Furia for Liquid, he is going to ruin his career forever.
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 Well, here's the mistake we're making, Maui. We just give the take. That word at the end, that like modifier forever. Did everything, didn't it? It did so much work on that sentence. I know. Because I was already thinking, yeah, not a bad take. Forever. It's just over for him if he doesn't join Team Liquid now. Like, oh, all right. Go on then, hit me with the reasons why. Why does he have to do it?
The thing is, like, did you watch their games in the past, 2 months?
Oh, they're garbage, mate. They're really bad team.
It's just terrible.
If people don't know it, it's almost EG levels. Like, they even lose all the online games as well. It's really mental.
It's getting there. They played 15 games. They had 13 best of threes, 7-6, 7 victories, 6 defeats. They beat NIP, and they beat, I believe, Gamer Legion, yes, and they took a map of Na'Vi, and that's it, right? Everything else they lost to some random teams to whatever, right? The 700k fallen buyout was supposed to be a big thing, and you know it didn't pan out. We know why. It's because Art is doing his thing. He's not supposed to be there. The coach is, you know, he needs to change the team himself. He's not doing good by his team right now. There is a lot of problems. Also, you know, the fact that Art called Yanko stupid, but look how that turned out right now. Yeah, but they're not even in this hot take. It's Keiserato who is still playing out of his mind. He had a personal tragedy that kind of decreased his form. He's back at it. He's demolishing teams. He has no business being in that team whatsoever. The perfect team right now, even before I said that, there is no, this is, can be a hot take by itself, there is no tier one team west of France ever, like across the Atlantic. There is no tier one team, not a single one. So there is tier one players, but not tier one team. If he goes to Liquid instead of Rainmaker right now, who is not supposed to be there, he got his chance. I watched his games. He kind of fell out from, you know, like if you land on a different planet and you don't know what the fuck is going on, that's how he is in the server, right? I don't know whose fault is it, but
like you land the little pod, and then when you land, Rainmaker walks by, and you go, no signs of life here. Just get back in, head back to Earth. There's nothing to see here.
What the fuck is happening? Yeah, the thing is that's how it looks like, right? And right now, imagine this, like he goes in Liquid, right? They get the firepower they need. They need the numbers, constant numbers from Keiserato. Yes, he's going to be a little bit of a clash of the role with Neff. Neff will adapt. It has been years since he's becoming a tier one player. He knows how to adapt to these things. And they need Keiserato to close up rounds. They have Patsy. They have Yekindar. Instead of, you know, on that IGL role, instead of giving him a proper developed player, the one who knows how to do things when the shit gets tough, who know how to provide numbers, they gave him a rookie who never spoke English, who never went across the Atlantic to play with a team, you know, that's for North American region, obviously their majority from Europe now, but you know what I mean. They have the rookie IGL who has never been an IGL before to work with this. They have a coach Debs, who hasn't been a coach for a while. He was in the IGL role. The being a coach is a completely different dynamic than being an IGL. Different environment, different behavior, different understanding, different responsibilities. Everything is like rookie in their team. They need somebody developed. OC is not a super developed player. He farmed North American teams. He played big events. He had bad games. He had good games, bad tournaments, good tournaments right now. They need Keiserato. Keiserato is a fucking rock. Put him in a defensive role in Liquid. Liquid becomes North American, well, I guess North American region kind of eligibility for the whatever. Comes.
Americas or whatever.
Yes,
yeah, sure.
with additional, you know, from Brazil. So it's a solution for them. I don't know how much is his buyout, how many years he has on the contract. I don't give a fuck if I'm Liquid. I'm doing that. I'm sending Rainmaker back to wherever he came from or selling him for whatever. And I'm getting Keiserato and putting him in that role. Maybe there is a question with the language, but Rainmaker is not a fucking professor of English language, is it? So he, Keiserato, can learn too. And then we have a powerful Liquid, a team that can be deep in the playoffs, that can win the event. Put him in that team where Patsy and Yekind are going crazy, where they have an OC who is going to be delivering some numbers, and Nav and Keiserato delivering the coup de grace, the fucking closer, and the fucking finishing the rounds. And that's where you have a powerful winning Liquid instead of this, whatever the fuck this abomination is.
Basically, check if the receipt's still in the bag for Rain Waker and return him, apparently. Like, see if there's like a 60-day return policy. Has that expired yet? Is there still a chance? Can we get store credit?
Buyer's protection, was it called?
Caveat emptor, exactly. Yeah. Come on, Maui, what do you think of this?
Well, the framing is what's funny about just it's going to ruin his career forever. I think Furia are a change away from being a good team right now. I mean, I watched everything that they did at ESL Pro League, I think, other than their Greyhound matches, which I just knew they would just stomp them, so I didn't really care. But which, by the way, I am self-promotion, by the way. I am watching them on my Twitch stream, on co-streams every single day.
Oh, okay.
But Twitch TV Maui Snake, by the way. But the thing with this Furia lineup right now, this thing with Furia and their lineup right now is that what's really weird about watching them play is that they, like, and this gets a little bit off track with Kassad's point lightly, but I do think that the reason that Fury are only a single change away is that, for me, Cello is just not an anchor player, and other than Fallen, who obviously as an opper should have a higher rating, Cello is the second lowest rated player on this Fury team throughout the ESL Pro League groups. And what would be nice to see is Cello just takes art spots, and for me, a take I was kind of toying with a little bit was that it would have been better for Furia if they actually just dropped Art and just kept Drop, because then Drop would just play the anchor spots. Cello would get to play a lot of Art spots where he's actually more comfortable, and it's similar to what he did on Imperial before, and he was good on Imperial doing those roles, and then you'd have a natural anchor. And so I thought this team could have been way, or I think now this team could be way better if they just did the one-for-one Drop for Art and let Fallen keep IGLing, because I actually think their T-sides are all right. I'm not going to go out and say that they're crazy good, but I think that they've been a little bit better here at ESL Pro League. And I also think that what actually is the weirdest thing about watching this Fury team play, the amount of times I've seen them lose 5v2s, 4v2s, and it partially comes down to Keiserato too, because he's often in those man advantage situations as one of the players on his team. But the way this team just lacks cohesion there is the most concerning thing for me. And now to address Kassad's main point about bringing him to Liquid, I do think that would be a slam dunk move. I don't think that's even debatable, as long as language isn't an issue with the roster. If Keiserato can play Rainmaker's positions, the team is just full of stars. And I love the point that you bring up, that they would become an America's team again, so that when they play the RMR, it is a free walk into the major for them every single cycle. So I think that would be a really, really sick move for Liquid. But I'll just say, like, I don't know how Furia lets that happen, because this team dies without Keiserato. They are horrible if he is not on this team.
There is nothing, before you go on Duncan, there's nothing they can do about it. If the contract is set right, there is nothing they can do. I would just wave them away, just goodbye, see you later, wearing a Liquid jersey and just fuck right off. But to your point, like, you have been watching Fury and their T-sides are all right. This is what you said. Literally,
a minute ago. Did you see who they played? That would be say that would be like saying, ah, yeah, you are a really good like offensive lineman or a linebacker in NFL, and I'm tackling like 13-year-old boys with my fucking 120 kilos. I was like, oh, yeah, he's fucking tackling. He's super good. They didn't play anybody who is who can challenge them. Greyhound, Movie Star Riders, NIP, Lost to Astralis, Greyhound, Greymer Legion, Zero Zero Nation, Monty, Espionage. What the fuck is that? Navi, Sprout 500, Mongols, Monty, Greyhound.
That is some like Snow Sweet Snow Cup level opposition in its trails.
Snow Sweet nothing.
Yes.
It's garbage. So the only way I can support your theory, but by one change, one roster change, but that one roster change means like changing three players. You know, in like in football, when like a coach changes like three players at once, and it still counts as a one substitution. You know, and that would make sense because this is just no.
My problem with this is there's obviously two separate components here. There is like essentially we're asking like can Furia not work, which is obviously an establishing point to Kayserato must leave, and then the third point is he must go to Liquid, right? The middle one, Kayserato must leave. I actually do agree with that. Like it's one of the things from last year I've been looking at myself, which is if I ignore all logistical and all like cultural things, I would just literally like forget even Liquid, mate. That's being generous to Liquid. I would have him on like FaZe Clan or something insane like that. Like I think this guy is insanely powerful. Like I think if you actually put him in like a starring role with one of like the best IGLs and some other world-class teammates, dude, he could just do it all now. He can win the major, he can win a grand, he can be everything. He can be the best rifle in the world, mate. He can contend with Eco and Axel, all those guys for that role. Like his skills are just there. He's so good. And in fact, you can even argue this era of Furia just proves it even more so. Because back in the day, it used to be, this is a sad thing as well if you only start watching the last 2 years of Furia. Guys, back in the days, it really was a 1A, 1B. It's what style you liked. If you liked the other style, you could say Yuri was the best player on Furia. Yuri's game the last years dropped off a fucking cliff, mate. He's just not a star player anymore. So the sad thing is, it is just Kayserato hard carrying now. And you've seen, actually, in these rare scenarios where he had the tournament where he had like family issues in the end, one where he had health issues, they have nothing if he doesn't frag, mate. If he frags, they become, for real, like EG. They become an absolutely dog shit big team. Like we're saying that we're not even playing good opposition and you're sort of going like 50% win rate. What? So in my opinion, if you have a player like that, this reminds me of why I always agreed with Maui that like eventually you had to fire Nafani. You can't have one player putting up like 1.25 ratings in tournaments and going out last place. Like that's unacceptable. Like except for rare cases where the player, like let's say the player was the IGL himself and he was calling himself, maybe even then it could be like acceptable. But like this is a guy who's just a really good rifle. Like there's so many players and teams could make use of this guy. I also do agree. I think the Liquid won't be a slam dunk, but unfortunately, if you notice, Liquid the last few years just don't make the big moves. The closest they've come is the Ikindar move, and in the end, technically, he brought himself out. But that's about the closest they've come to a big move, like actually get one of the world's best talents. So unfortunately, one, I get the vibe Liquid aren't thinking about this. And then worse, if we come to this specific example of Kayserato, right, I don't know enough about Brazilian culture to know why this is, but they do seem to have quite a large aversion to playing with non-Brazilians. And it's nothing to do with language, by the way. Most of them speak competent enough English that, like, especially someone like this, where you wouldn't even have to be the guy common, you could just frag, basically. They could be on the team. But I actually get the vibe. People are going to think I'm going full Gowlers, but I mean it. I actually get the vibe that, like certain other countries, I mean, by the way, Koreans are like this in League of Legends, they just want to only play with people from their country. They want it to be that not only do they come in Brazilian and Portuguese, but they also want it to be that they're around their teammates. If you notice, one thing I'll give them credit for, it's not an act. They do have like a very sort of social dynamic within those big Brazilian teams. Like they are, like there always are a couple of them are good friends. There always are a bunch that go out to dinner all the time and having holidays. Days with each other and stuff. Like it's not like some of the European teams where people are kind of sometimes mercenaries, and even when you leave it's like, well, whatever, you know, you just won't play well. It's not like any hard feelings. Unfortunately, I do get the vibe, essentially, logistically, I don't think this will ever happen. Unfortunately to me, if you just look at their scene, we've said this about a lot of talents in their scene. How about Henny when he used to be on Immortals? What about even KNG? This guy could have been a beast if he'd been in a team, an NA team. I think of Phelps. These are all people who had clear talent. You could just look at the eye test and go, these guys are fucking good. But not only did they not leave the region, but I actually get the vibe, unfortunately, they just don't want to. So I don't think it's even in their mind. Yeah. And then lastly, if you look, Furia just does not let people go. Good players do not leave Furia. Like, I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know if it's contract prison. I don't know if it's some sort of, like, let's say, extracurricular exertion. But, like, people just don't leave that team, mate. They just don't.
I don't give a fuck. The thing is, like, you said, like, they don't want to leave the region. They want to stick to Brazilians. That's not their fault. Like, that is not their fault. That's the fault people in the organizations. Put me in charge in a fucking GM spot or somebody who is going to be making these things work, and you'll see how they forget about this brotherhood, you know, type of situation where I need to play with my teammates and all this shit. Yeah, that those things, they go away with success.
Oh, by the way, there's one other angle on this as well, which is I actually have a... I'm not as hyped as Maui is about Furia. Here's the real problem. People might know, even though they'll think it goes cap against the grain, I actually made a video when this lineup was set where I actually predicted they had a chance to be really good and maybe be like top five in the world with this lineup. But unfortunately, I was too generous. Like, I'll tell you right now, this is another reason I don't fuck with Fallen's game post-2017. Because I don't think he even... I think he is incredibly cynical, guys. I think he is one of those players, like the old VP players at the end, where they know they are making insane salary and the goal is keep getting the salary. It's not be world class. Whatever you have to do. So in the same way as the reason why they didn't change players in VP, it's not because they didn't know there was problems. It's because they all want to make 20k a month. So it's like, hey, let's all fucking shut up and let's just get to the next tournament and see if we can get that paycheck again. Right. The reason why I say this is my hopes that Fallen could turn it around made assumptions like they're giving him the IGL role and he will have like say of what they do. This is the reason I'm saying it's cynical, because it looks to me, this reminds me of Team Liquid, dude. You remember when he joined Team Liquid? Your first assumption was, right, he must be joined to be IGL. And they were like, no, it's going to be Stewie. And then what he did, Fallen, was in Liquid, which I reckon he knew was a bit of a train wreck. He just basically waited like as long as possible to eventually have to assert himself and be the IGL, because you just bought yourself like 3-5 months by doing that. Then when they finally make you IGL, that's when your timer begins. Right. Did he do a good job as IGL? Eventually he didn't, so he got kicked. But like by that time, he'd gotten like 9 months, a year out of the team. You make another change in between. Out goes this guy, in comes Shocks or something. You can, if you want to be cynical, you can extend this period. Essentially, your game is get the check. It isn't like have a result in the server. And the reason I bring this up is because the most obvious thing to me about Furia is if you sign Fallen, you're going all in on his vision as IGL. So immediately, he already takes over as AWPer, IGL, and Gary is working with him. Whereas I've read loads of these interviews with the guys from Fury. It's the opposite, dude. As far as I can tell, Art is still heavily involved. It's like Art, Gary, and some mix of Fallen are deciding things. You look at Art's roles, he clearly hasn't become like some super subservient player. He's taken some of the things he wants in the game. And so to me, it feels like they're like... in English, you would say like there's much of nothing. Like they're a little bit of this and that and the other. And I don't even know what the coherent identity is supposed to be. So sadly, to wrap it up, all they have is Keserato in this team right now. Like even on paper, it looks like a good roster, but none of the others turn up. They don't do anything. Like Fallen is completely neutered in this team. Art is crap. And then like we're saying about Cello, as far as I can tell, they're just giving Cello like the old taco treatment. Like your job is literally to be at the bottom of the scoreboard. Like what? Like that's not even how you make a team, guys. That's just actually like abusive at that point in time. Like the joke is, if you saw Cello on Imperial, he's a way better player than this. So why are we giving him the drop treatment again and just going, you're just the whipping boy of our team, basically. Like, so we don't have to feel bad. You just have to have the shit roles. Like, to me, they're actually like Kassad's talk. I think they've done a terrible job with this five players. I think you could do so much more with these players.
Just to mention your point about Fallen and Liquid. Like, he went there 9 months, he got the money, but it's not his fucking fault. He saw the opportunity, he took it. It's Liquid's fault.
Sure, not they enabled him.
And said,
sure.
Like, listen, yeah. You are the IGL now. I am the general manager. I am putting this team together with my coach. You are the IGL. Not Stewie, not Art, not anybody else. You are brought here, paid $700,000 for you to be the IGL. Not for you to just like linger around for 4 months until we made the swap, and then you linger another 5 months, and then you get all this 9 month salary, and then you quit, and then you switch to another team, and you get maybe another chance. That's all on organizations, not on the players. Players are going to look
to find the best possible deal to maximize their financial income as much as possible. Nobody's going to play for free because they know all this money is here. It's the job of the general managers that we don't have to recognize the value of the 700K. Just compare 600K for Monessi, 700K for Fallen. Does that make any fucking sense? Fallen is 30 plus. Monessi is a proper gamble.
Sure.
It's a proper gamble. Monessi could have gone to shit, but it didn't. It was a gamble that paid off massively. They paid the potential. They didn't pay the value. It would be a mistake. I would never done it, but they did it and it works, right? So just to compare those two. And if you're a general manager, dude, you are not getting paid 700. I can get the similar skill offer that's Fallen for $50,000. Less. In Europe, in South America, in North America.
I mean, obviously, anywhere. Furious should just make a trade. They should just say, if you give us Monessi plus 100K, you can have Fallen. So,
yeah, just, yeah. It's a fair
listen,
deal.
Listen, economics, right? It works. That deal works all day for me, Maui, if you know.
It's all the fucking organization, the people that we sure. are not having right now to make, because they're not hiring the CS experts. People who understand the value of the player, the age of the player, the longevity of the player, the value that sure. he can bring inside the server, outside the server. They're fucking up. They paid 700K for what? For 50% win rate against tier 3 opposition? Not a single
player. Oh, by the way, one other thing to throw in. The reason why, like, your ultimate point, look, I don't think he really is going to have his career ruined forever if he does 19 Liquid now. But I understand this is a hot take, sure. But one thing I will say I agree with is I'll actually tie it to Maui's point of why he criticised Nafani, which is people have got to stop letting names like Simple, Zimu, Nico make you believe everyone can just be at their 10 out of 10 form for, like, 7 years straight. Like, we have no idea if Keserato can do this for 3 more years. By the way, I've seen the greatest rifle as ever for it. They just have years that are down years and then years that are up years. Like, for all we know, maybe this was the peak of Keserato. So just like the Axel example he gave, are you really going to run it out and waste, like, say 2 years of them being amazing on, like, lineups that can't win, basically? That'll suck. Like, that, you will regret that if that's how it goes. Like, it will be a bummer because, especially because, there's the other thing, once that talent goes, mate, sometimes it never comes back. Think of some of the examples we all know, like fucking Kirby and stuff. Like, when your game goes, sometimes you just spend 3 years as, like, some problem child player. Like, well, can they get the best out of him? What role should he play? Sometimes it never comes back. Like, you can't take it for granted. And right now, by the way, he is cracked out again. Now that he's back actually well again, yeah. He's fucking smurfing again. He's still a beast. Yeah. Do you have one, Maui?
Yeah. I'm not going to phrase it as ridiculously as Kassad's, but I'll just say, I can't stand to keep watching Brolin play on English-speaking lineups. Okay.
I had a Nipperated hot take, so come on, hit me with it. I'll maybe spin off it.
So I actually looked at all the numbers, and obviously, I'd say, like, there's two things in Brolin's career that people have talked about the most. One is that people say he was a Krieg abuser, which is kind of, in a way, actually been verifiably proven not entirely true, where it's that his best year ever was, the Krieg was nerfed in April of that year, and he still performed very well for the rest of that year after the Krieg nerf. So it's not like, to me, I find that to be a little bit more fugazi than, like, the whole English angle, which is what I'm taking. I looked at the numbers for the exact time that all of his rosters switched to English, and I looked at his stats on those lineups, and I looked at his stats as soon as he joined Fnatic speaking Swedish, and looked at all the time that he played at LAN. So basically, there's four segments of Brolin's career once he joined Fnatic. The first is that when he was playing on LAN with that old Fnatic roster, they were speaking Swedish. He had a 1.10 rating on LAN for about 3 years. It was from August 2018 to August 2021. So that was a three-year stretch where he is a very good player. Then, as soon as he started speaking English in that August of 2021, when Fnatic started bringing on Alex, he went from a 1.10 rating on LAN to 1.01 on LAN until he switched back to speaking Swedish for NIP, where on LAN, in March of 2022, he went back up to a 1.08, okay. So obviously not his old form again. And then once he started speaking English with this new iteration NIP, where it was when Alexi B joined, up to now when Hampus is IGLing, it's a 1.03 on LAN. So there's a clear difference in Brolin's output when he is speaking Swedish. It's very clear that when he's playing, especially with this lineup, because I've been watching this lineup pretty closely, and I was obviously watching the NIP lineup with Alexi B pretty closely, that it does feel like a few of the players on the team have very poor macro understanding of what their teammates are doing. And I also think that sometimes, I've watched them before, and sometimes two people are covering the same angle and leaving a gap on the map. Like, there are moments where it's just like, why are they clearly don't know what each other is doing, and Brolin does suffer from this. Brolin does sometimes end up having overlap with teammates because he doesn't know what's going on across the map, and that leads to his performance going down. It's not just mechanics that's worse, or it's not just the fact that he switched from the Krieg back to the AK. It's the fact that it's a communication issue for me. And so my main thing here is, unfortunately, there's no obvious way to put together a great Swedish roster, but I think there are enough pieces that if a team really wanted to, you could put together five Swedish-speaking players relatively easily, and they could be competitive, and then you would see the heights that Brolin was at once again.
Okay. You want me to take
it? Yeah, go on.
Until you figure it out? Because this hot take is a garbage.
Okay.
I mean, it is. The thing is, like, first of all, Brolin isn't retarded. Like, he is not.
Go on. Here we go. Go on.
He's not retarded. He is a bright young man. He is experienced player. He has been playing on Tier 1 for multiple years under multiple teams. So he isn't somebody who is just, you know, he isn't retarded. Let's say it like that. So educational system in Nordic countries is pretty high, especially when it comes to foreign languages. That means Norway, Finland, Denmark, you know, Sweden. All of them have really high, you know, educational systems. So they can, people in Nordic countries speak English very,
oh,
very
phenomenally,
well.
Yeah, sure.
It's just unbelievable how good they are. You know, some kids, look at Danish players and how they, you know, communicate and how they articulate their points. And
I think Swedish people speak English actually better than Danish people, from my personal experiences,
so,
too. Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. For me, the biggest problem that Brolin has is the fact that he is too emotional.
Move back a bit. You're too far away from the mic. There you go.
But he is too emotional. He is too, his emotions go really like a roller coaster. He doesn't know how to handle them. And that's not his fault. He reminds me, from what I've seen by his body language interviews, the interviews that I've done with him, I think in Rio, like after the game, or maybe Kato, I can't remember. But the thing is, like, he has a trouble handling losses, handling defeats, handling bad form. And I don't think anybody in NIP, because we know that NIP is not the healthiest organization there is right now. We remember the device fiasco and all these things that are happening inside their organizations and the things behind the scenes and everything. So there was nobody to deal with that when it comes to, you know, Brolin, to help him understand how to deal with emotions and how not to let them affect your game on any level. Yes, the communication is a little bit, you know, problematic when you keep switching Swedish English, right? And it can cause to some of the rounds being messed up, like you mentioned before, with the gaps being on the map. But I don't think that's the case. I think that he reminds me of the worst version of JKS, the person who speaks English very well, you know, because obviously he's Australian, right? So it's a native language, but he had a similar problems like Brolin. His form would drop, his form would go up, Krieg would go up, he would be slamming, that Krieg goes away, that he drops off, then he goes again. I think it's the environment, I think it's the how people affect him around him, the game that he's been playing, and it's just a lot of things that are not connected to the communication. I'm not saying that you are not right completely about the fact that, you know, constantly switching doesn't affect your performance, because it does a little bit, but not to the point where you drop off massively, especially if you are experienced player. He was like 17 years old, and then you keep switching him, bringing new IGLs and constantly creating chaos, it's going to affect. But he's been here for a long time. I think he has a problem with mental game. As soon as he fixes that in some sort of a stable lineup, because you look at the previous lineups of NIP and you name Mila one stable NIP lineup in the past 4 years. Name one. There isn't, right? And he was there. He was in Fnatic that didn't have a good time. And he switching in the those environments, like I'm saying to you, is from experience. Those environments where you don't know who your fifth is, when there is a, not hatred, but where there is attraction between the players in the team, between the players and the coach.
Tension.
Between the players in the management, and then you don't know what your future is, and that the contracts keeps coming up, the salaries are late, the prize money is late, then maybe your girlfriend is like pissing you off.
She's
all
late
the time.
As well.
It's just.
The trifecta, go on.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help, right? So all of these things combined is making him, and he is a person, he's not very mentally, you know, strong person, right, that can deal with all these things because of his age. But all in all, I think with a little bit of help from different people and maybe more experienced players inside the team, he can be the best version of himself, disregarding the language that they talk.
Right, what I'll do is I'll give my thoughts, and then I actually can spin this into my own take, but it's about Nip more generally. So basically, my take is I'll go from a little bit of a different angle. I think another, if we're comparing variables, Maui, and like A-B testing, another factor for me that I think is quite telling is if you look at when Brolan was his absolute best, and he really did, if people don't know, look like one of the most promising rifle players in the entire world. Like, there's people at the time, like the other comparison was obviously Sergei from Finland. These two players looked like, if they just keep it together, they're going to be on this top 20 list every year. And essentially, if they ever like peak, they can be like what some like Rops is now, like an actual top 10 player that can be like the MVP of tournaments. But neither actually sort of like made the long-term jump. And one of the factors I think for Brolan that people underrate is he did a lot of that early success in that lineup of Fnatic, which had the three players that had been in the major winners. You had JW, Flusher and Crims, who, by the way, got to be, I know people abuse the term core and they apply it to different players. But the basis you have with those three players is mental. Like, they've already played together like 4 or 5 years at this point in time. And they're even the players that do the bloody dirty work. Crims and Flusher are the ones who will do like the lurk spots or the like shitty entry role or like the not as classy. Well, the first thing first, if you're some young stud, and at the time they understood he was the firepower, mate, you're almost playing the game on easy mode there. You've got mega veterans with synergy, great chemistry, famously efficient, but very good comms. They were always mega at common, and there's a reason why those teams always were slightly more than the sum of their parts when they were at their best. So to me, I actually think that's a bit underrated. I think at the time, the funny thing is, I think people do the opposite. They kind of do what they did with Zewu in 2019, where they go, but look, he's got no help because in terms of firepower, the other players don't have the numbers. But I always used to think that about Zewu in 2019. It's like, bro, if I was going to be a hard carry player, it's pretty different to be a hard carry player with like Dennis and Spiddy, or like I'm hard carrying mega veterans who can all play their roles like RPK and MBK. Like, bro, that's different. Like, the difference is they might not be fragging, but they can be doing other things in the game that are making it easier for me. They can even be comming for me. They can even be telling my people set up things. It can even be different factors that don't even appear in the server on the scoreboard. So one, I think that was a factor. Like, you had a basically a really good setup for a young star. Whereas if you look at the Fnatic and the Nip lineups you're talking about, these are, like Kassad says, it's like you just keep putting four random players together. Like, there you go. Oh, here's another player. Did that not work? Take one out, put one in. Like, that was just some crazy cycle where he never got an established lineup. So I would actually say, also, by the way, just as a quick aside, I don't actually believe people apply Krieg Abuser correctly. I consider the Krieg Abusers the bad players that the Krieg made okay. So here's the joke. The Krieg Abuser on Mouse wasn't actually fucking Rops. It was like Carrigan and Chris J. The difference was it would make Carrigan's entries about 1.5 times better because the gun was amazing and you could run and spray with it. Rops was a god where he had an AK or a fucking Krieg. Same with Brolan. This guy's a stud with an AK. He's got mega aim. Like, certainly didn't need the Krieg. Go on.
Yeah, let me bring up one stat, actually, because I didn't state it as clearly as I wanted to when I first brought this up, is that Brolin's numbers in that 2020 year where he was top 15, according to HLTV, he literally got better after the Krieg got nerfed.
Right.
Like, that actually stands to what your point is that all those noobs that were killing him with the Krieg then couldn't kill him as easily. Because now it was an AK versus AK duel, and his KPR went up, and his kill death ratio went up, and his rating went up. Like, every all of his stats went up once the Krieg got nerfed.
Like, that's the reason why I actually did used to make fun of Nico refusing to use the Krieg. Not because I think Nico would be any better with the Krieg. He's already godlike, mate. It's because basically you're just making the duel of your AK versus some fucker like Carrigan. You're just giving him like a a chance he should never have in the fight. Like, in that scenario, you have to, like, fight fire with fire and take the OP gun yourself and both get an easy spray, if you know what I mean. Whereas in that sense, it's almost like Nico's trying to be too honourable and win, like, the correct way. Whereas it's like that fucking Game of Thrones scene, isn't it, where he throws that guy through the moon door and then that person's like, you didn't fight with honour. And he's like, he did. And that fucking guy just chucked down that hole. That's like what Nico was doing that year. It's like, you don't do that, mate. You get wrecked. So, okay, to bring it back, here's the hot take. I actually think this NIP lineup is a complete waste of everyone involved's time. Everyone. NIP and all five players. It's a waste of their fucking time. Because here's what sucks about it. I don't think in Counter-Strike or sports in general, you ever want to be like well-rounded, but not excellent at any one thing. That is a recipe for disaster. I mean, you'll know this. I mean, we do our basketball show, Maui. I actually consider the worst position in basketball to be teams that are good enough to make the playoffs, but do nothing in the playoffs. That is purgatory right there. Because on the one hand, because you make the playoffs, you can convince yourself, hey, if it goes awesome, and you know, we just improve a bit, then we win. But you won't win the championship. But because you made the playoffs, you won't make the hard decisions. You won't blow it up. You won't reset. And so famously in the NBA, I mean, this is what teams like the DeMar DeRozan and Raptors were like. It's a nightmare. You're always going to just be going like this far, but not winning. And then like never bad enough to fully drop out. And you'll just basically waste extra time with the lineup. So if you look at this lineup, right, they don't have anything that makes them the best. If I look at their IGL, their IGL's a bit sus, but not the worst, Tampus. If I look at their AWPer, their AWPer's an improving player. Hedrick, he's not world class. If you look who their best rifle star is, I mean, mate, fucking Sophie's choice on that one. Pick who you want. Is it Rez? Is it Config? Is it Bro? It doesn't matter. None of them are Nico or fucking Axel or Caserato. So when you look at the team, it's like, bro, what do we have? Essentially, we've got like a team where the floor of the team is okay. It's why this team can every now and then trip over and beat a top team. But like, if you had to bet, you know, if there was a concept like the stock market, if you could, you know, you can bet on teams to win the event. I wish we could just short teams and bet against them. Bro, I would make so much money. All I would do every event on this team is they don't make semis. There you go. I win again. As long as the odds weren't mental, I would bet on that every tournament. Because this team looks like I say, the problem is it isn't bad enough to totally blow it up. But I think you need to blow it up. Like, to me, I'll go even one further. I've said this ever since they made this lineup, especially now they don't have Alexi B, so I don't have some angle where the IGL could do something brilliant. Hampus is just an okay IGL. You cannot have all three of these players at once. Config, Brolan, and Rez. Pick two. They're the same fucking player. They're the same player, essentially. Like, the strength and their role that they should be doing, they're essentially all sort of in the same wheelhouse. And at the moment, it's like, bro, you've got to get rid of at least one of these players. Like, but that's why I say it's a waste of time. I actually think this team is just going to be going through the motions. All they will do is what they've done so far. They will go to tournaments. One tournament, they'll come ninth. One tournament, they'll come fifth to eighth, sixth. That's it. They're not going to win anything. They're probably not going to bomb and come last place, sure. But I actually think it's a waste of everyone's time. And the worst thing is, like I say, this is so rare if you think about this. Normally, there's someone benefits from being in a shit team, from stealing a check. I actually think every player could be better in a different team. I think they're all wasting their fucking time being in this one squad. Like I say, what strength does this team have? It's not that weak, but what strength does it have? I don't think they have anything, personally.
The thing is, like, I agree with you 100% when you're like analogy with other teams, I guess, when you say like, you know, we're reaching the playoffs and then maybe if we like work a little bit more, maybe we can. No, you can't, because this is the ceiling for you. Like, that's the ceiling. Sometimes getting into the playoffs, like NIP, that's the ceiling for this lineup. Looking at the lineup, that is it. This lineup is not a championship lineup. Never going to be. It isn't now. The reason why I'm saying this is because I had the same curse. I was in the same curse. When we played, we reached the semis. Yes, we reached the finals.
You mean Renegades, yes. Now, yeah?
Yes, Renegades, 100 Thieves. Yeah, we reached the semis. We reached the finals, but that wasn't it. That was punching above our weight. Let's be honest. We were punching above our weight. Considering the players that we had, the skill that we had.
Yes.
We were punching way, way above our weight. I don't know how or what, but we had a good team chemistry, whatever happened, it worked. And we were like, you know, placed higher than we should normally be. And this is where I understood the thing that you were saying right now. I understood it back then. I said it. Like, we need to move away from Gratisfaction. We need to move away from Lias in order to get to the next step and start getting into the more finals and maybe titles. but I wasn't listened to, and you know, it turned out the way it turned out. So NIP and other teams are in the same spot like them and us, Mouse, for example, right? And yes, they have a young team. Liquid is another, you know, team that has some players, but maybe playoffs and that's it, right? Because they can't do anything more. And right now, looking at NIP, I don't see anything that can push them into this semis constantly, right? If you get constantly into semis, that means that you're doing something really good, right? If you get sometimes, like you said, 9th or 6th to 8th or something, what does it mean? You're just a placeholder in the playoffs and an easy run for somebody else to get into the semis. Teams like G2, teams like Heroic, teams like Vitality, FaZe, or whoever, you know. And I do agree. I don't know what their next move is. Are they happy with what they have right now in terms of, you know, organization? Because players, I imagine they are not happy whatsoever, because NIP, I believe they think they are some sort of, you know, legendary organization based on the 10 years ago or whatever, but they are really not. And now they are facing a lot of problems. I don't know what future is going to bring for them in CS2, but this lineup is not going to get there, because they obviously expect titles and the former glory, right? But it's not going to happen at all. Now, go.
Well, I kind of had a direction NIP could go based on my other hot take, so I'll just kind of combine it. Basically, this is all like weird that we're focusing so much on NIP, but to me, they were one of the more interesting storylines of this most recent ESL Pro League group. And one is that with them, I would actually just switch. So to get Brolin back into form, I would switch back to Swedish. I would keep Rez, Hampus, and Brolin, and then I would just try to find the two best Swedish players right now, and I think they're perfect. I think they're perfect for this team. I think that they wouldn't necessarily actually... Again, like the question is, would they become a championship roster with this? No, but they would actually retain the identity of being Sweden's best team, which in its sense does seem to provide some value in terms of fandom, and just also would probably actually raise...
Sorry,
the
Maui,
abilities.
But who? Tell me, who do they...
So the two players, the best Swedish player right now, and this was my other hot take, is Nock. Nock is the best Swedish player right now. And so if you were able to get him from Apex, then you would be... already a better team. We saw what Nock was able to do with NIP before. Like, again, it's not a championship roster, but you're not making a championship roster with this core. There's no way to keep three of these players and make a championship roster. It's just not possible. So if you're at least going to try to find an angle to make you a little bit better, and you're finding an angle that's going to actually make you Swedish, to me, then I would get one Nock, and two, I would get Isaac from Gamer Legion, because Isaac is like the exact kind of player you're looking for this team, where you're trying to get an anchor player who doesn't need any resources, is just going to do a good job on those extremity positions, and then you would have Brolin playing better because he'd be speaking in Swedish again. You would have Hampus and Rez hopefully just slightly getting better because they'll switch to Swedish 2 again. But I think that to me would make NIP at least a more exciting lineup, and it would probably actually lift their ranking by just a handful of points.
All right, I'll give you this one. That lineup of NIP would beat this lineup of NIP. I think it would improve them a little bit. I'm not happy with your choices, but I do agree with the fact that it would make them better, especially more like a unit rather than this, like, you know, just every man for himself kind of thing, because he does look like that. Like, they don't look like a team whatsoever. Maybe bringing back the identity will spark something. Nock, personally... when I spoke to Jacob, he said super highly, like super positive things about him. Like, he's insane, he's this and that. Like, he really did. And, you know, I tend to believe Jacob because he's a player that's not going to bullshit you. So that's how I kind of agree on that one. But I haven't seen as much that can, you know, impress me or, you know.
By the way, Kassan, here's an obvious one I could point out. You know, you could just have Jacob in that lineup. He can speak Swedish too.
No, I don't think he can.
He's Norwegian, mate. It's basically the same shit as far as I know. The problem, as far as I know, is if the Swedes understand them or something like that. They can speak Swedish.
Right.
As far as I know, Norwegians are the same as Danish, but they just speak Swedish well, like it's a language they speak in school or whatever. I believe he could. I might be wrong on that. Could be wrong. I know Rain in the past.
Maybe you're right. But maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Anyway, the
just Jacob's
contract is out at the end of the year. So,
okay.
You never know.
All right. Right, does someone else have a take? You got one now? Yes. Come on.
Yeah. I have like four different takes. But
give me your best one then.
I can segue to the second chance aspect. And okay. I'm going to stick to the Brazilian train. I have so many hot takes, but I'm going to use this one.
Well, I appreciate, by the way, Marius, that Cassad doesn't like... You have to understand, guys, we like the characters that everyone plays on this show, so we're not trying to fuck with the dynamic. I just like the way, if I disagreed with you, Maui, I would say, well, I see your point, Maui, but I disagree. Cassad just goes, that take is garbage, and then just leaves it. Doesn't explain... It's like you have to ask him, can you explain my piece? Oh, fucking hell. All right, then. So come on, then. Hit me with your tick, Zan. What is the tick? Come on.
The thing is, like, I'm feeling especially generous today. Why? You know, I mean, I'm engaged. I'm planning a wedding.
Okay, fair
enough. Congratulations. Just, it's like, yeah, thank you. It's just, when you got a fright woman, she kind of, you know, tends to open you up. Well, you know what I mean. Not in a bad way, but anyway, the second chance that I would give is to Cold Zera.
Fucking that came completely out of nowhere. Okay, hit me with it. Hit me with it. Come on.
This is the two-time best player in the world right now. He is still super sharp. He is very
from like 6 years ago. So I broke.
He is still very sharp. Listen. In his, like, in your defense, actually, his stats are not the best, not the worst, you know. Okay. He needs to get out of this, we are going back to this Brazilian brotherhood, camaraderie, whatever the hell is it, right? And he needs to get into international team, a team that, you know, it could have been TSM. Why the fuck not? It could have been the iteration of EG. Why the fuck not? It could have been... Mouse, you know, with the experience, why not? He could get a salary cut, whatever. But look at this. How many worse players than Cold Zera got the second, the third, the fourth chance? And not just the worst, the other players, I don't want to say like worse players, and I say names that those players think they're worse. Basically, take Fallen, for example. When he was in Imperial or whatever that team, MIBR, I don't know, remember, he got into Liquid. That's the second chance. Now he got into Furia. That's the third chance. How many chances is he going to get?
No, we're not. Yeah.
Her as well. NBK, how many chances did he get? Is Cold Zera worse than NBK? No, is he younger? Yes, he's younger. He's 28 now. He's sharper. He's smarter. He has a lot of experience. He's a major winner twice. He can hit. His problem was adapting to the fucking game because he was still living in 2015 and 16 and some other things. But does he deserve a second chance? I think absolutely do. It doesn't have to be fucking FaZe or Vitality or whoever. It has to be a team that has a potential, like I said, Mouse and so on, TSM. I don't care. It doesn't really matter. Some team that's gonna have an opportunity to compete on events that are not, you know, Snow Sweet Snow and Republic of whatever the fuck, you know. So my take is that he's 28 now. His stats are not that great. His stock is super low. You can get him cheap. You can direct him into proper, you know, into proper direction. You can lead him into his fucking place where he's super focused and he's going to deliver you numbers. It's not going to be 2016 numbers, but it's going to be numbers good enough to get you to the CS2 major, to get you to the IEM events, if you have the proper team around him, right? Team that are, like I said, again, Mouse, whatever. So he right now he's in a team with some Brazilians that I have no idea who they are. They played against TSM today, I believe, and they lost 2-1, something like that. So I do believe that many players who didn't deserve a second chance got one. And the player that did deserve for Cold Zera, yes, he has a lot of his problems, right? But I think we can grant him at least a year or 2 year contract in a team that can make a difference, right? So that's my hot Brazilian spicy take.
You buying it, Maui?
Well, Not exactly, because I would say that what we've seen happen in the past with players who maybe somebody thinks they should have a second chance, well, they have to earn it. That's the whole beauty of the scene. And people like Kenny S, for example, that was trying till his last professional breath playing for Falcons, showed that he didn't quite have what it takes, but he played on a roster, to me, that wasn't holding him back. If anything, some of those players on the team were contributing more than him.
Sorry, Maui, I have to cut you off one more time just because the first sentence you said, and I'm not going to do it anymore. Sorry.
All right, Kenny, go on.
The thing is, like, Jakim was done. He was done.
Okay.
In face. He was applying for a normal job to fucking blow up mountains in Norway or whatever the fuck he did. He didn't play CS. He didn't earn a second chance. I called him up. Straight up fucking called him on the phone and asked him if he wants to join. And he joined, and then his career changed, right? You don't need a set to earn second chance and fucking get some crazy numbers. You need to, like, want the second chance. That's the thing, right?
Okay.
And if somebody is willing to give you the second chance, sorry again.
Fair enough.
Okay. Well, he's fighting for that right now. What he's doing with this fake Natty lineup in the post-00 Nation breakup, well, they didn't break up. They just don't have an org anymore.
Just got kicked, so
they're still... They're still trying to compete as essentially, well, it is the exact same roster. So what they're trying to do is just fight for a contract right now. And I think that's cool. I think that's, like, that's kind of how this scene is supposed to work. You know, it's not that Cold Zera is struggling out there. Like, he's definitely saved enough. Hopefully he hasn't spent it from what he did with SKLG that, and FaZe for that matter, that he can just kind of use this period as opposed to where a lot of pros just kind of sat on their hands and hope for the offer. What Cold Zera is doing is he's reaching out and trying to grab it. And for that, I actually amount a lot of respect to Cold Zera. I give him the most. I don't think that there's many tier one pros that have reached the heights that he did and then still are humble enough to play without an org with a bunch of youngsters and show that he still has more to contribute. But I just think that there's no reason for me necessarily to say that he's going to be worthy of, like, a top 15 team spot, because I think the team that he's on right now, I think they should get a contract. I think that if they're actually able to produce some of the similar number, some of the numbers that they were able to with 00 Nation, at least get an RMR spot, like, because this team should probably make it through the Americas qualifier, then you can start talking about it, because that's what they're fighting for right now. And I don't think that they're too far away from it, because there's some talent on that fake Natty team. I mean, some of those guys, like NQZ, everybody was talking about him for such a long time. Lato, Dumao, I know that some people really have some massive hard-ons for those guys too. And Nekiz is a great player to also round out your team with. So for Cold Zera right now, he's gone into the twilight period of his career as an in-game leader and reshaping his game. And I do agree with you. Like, his numbers aren't terrible or anything like that. I'm not really watching fake Natty games, I'll be honest about that. But in terms of pure output as an individual, Cold Zera is doing what he can right now. I don't think he deserves to be on a team better than this one, but I don't think that this team is that bad either. And I think that they'll, if you put them in the Americas qualifier right now for the RMR, I think they would make it.
No.
My problem is, like, what you just said at the end there, Maui, is if this really was, like, Kassad has just been watching too many highlights from 2017, he's remembering the old days when Cold Zero was the king. If you're just trying to put that player one for one into modern Counter-Strike, look, I don't think that player exists anymore, so I don't think it would work. But my biggest problem actually is that he has, like, I sort of agree with you, Maui, he has actually attempted to reinvent himself. He's become the IGL. He's totally changed up the people he's playing with. If people don't know, if you know the offers that he had before he came to, like, the Brazilian teams, he could still be in the mix of, like, the tier one, tier two European scene and the NA scene. Like, he actually had offers where, as far as I know, he chose, like I said with the example of KSR, he chose to go back to the Brazilian scene. He could have stayed in the international scene. If people don't know, he had that status, actually, like Fallen and Chox, etc., where people who are in the international scene do vividly remember when you were the king and you were beating them, and they will give you a shot. Like, you are CS royalty, they'll give you extra chances, even in the teams like the Liquids of the world, which you probably shouldn't be in, like Fallen, where he just keeps getting these gigs over and over and over again. My problem is this: the guy who plays today as an IGL is just whatever. Like, to me, it's so crazy that this is almost like a universal principle, but holy fuck does that second caller syndrome destroy people's minds, mates. They can never get it somehow. They really don't understand. To me, the obvious example is secondary AWP. It's the same shit. If you only AWP the moment you feel like it or on your very best CT, half of one map because you're sick at that spot. That is not the same as being a world-class AWPer. So if you then say to the real AWPer of your team, like Nico once did in G2, I think I'll be the primary AWPer, then I think you're wasting everyone's time because I don't think you actually are the primary AWPer. I don't think you're that style of player. And I think basically it would take away from your game and the team's game. So my issue is, I can believe these stories that much like Alu and Ents with an XEB and other players in history, I can believe that as a secondary call, this guy was probably doing a great job. If you look at how he played the lurky style at the back of the pack, I could even imagine he did have like a different read on the game and using the info he had, he could make a cool call of what he was going to do or where he wants to end the round. The problem is, as an IGL, he's just always seemed like whatever to me. I've watched his teams, they were okay. I mean, I'll just say it straight up. I thought it was quite telling when he brought in Taco to be his IGL, and Taco looked better as an IGL. And that's not a diss to Taco. Taco's another person who spent years trying to transition his role. So my main issue is, I would actually only be interested because if it was old Coldzera. And here's the problem. Of all the players I wouldn't pick to make a comeback, he's nearly the top of my list. And the reason why is, I think unfortunately his style was one of the highest resource, quite frankly, selfish styles ever in Counter-Strike. Now, I don't mean selfish in a negative sense. Like, spoiler, if you're like Cristiano Ronaldo, you probably should take all the shots if you get one on goal. Like, you're just fucking amazing at scoring. But the reason I gave that example, Cassad, is one of the reasons why Cristiano Ronaldo's career is ruined is because he can only be that player. He won't be the guy who's like 39, just chilling, playing 20 minutes off the bench and going like, hey, I'll try and get some chances. He needs to be the guy who's the best player in the world. And I get that vibe, unfortunately, from the stories I've heard behind the scenes about Coldzera. He also has that ego. Like, at least when he was playing his proper roles, even in phase these days, I've heard he really did still think that, like, he could do that shit from 2017. And the problem with that was, I've always said this, it's the reason why people hated on me, why I actually did used to think Nico was better than Coldzera, both when he was on Mouse and on phase. Because my point was, I can take that Nico, and because I seen it in this dog shit Mouse team, I can drop him in any team and he can do this. I don't think you could ever say that about that Coldzera. I think if you start taking pieces off his team for Taco, Fallen, or Colin, I think his game drops. He's still a good player, but he wouldn't be like far and away the best player in the world. So I think the issue for me is, I don't think, unlike a lot of great players, actually, he's ever been able to mentally change to be like, I'm not the star of the show, essentially. And so I'll be fair, like you did there, Maui. I'll also add in other people. It's also why my boys, Kenius and Guardian, inevitably couldn't be in Tier 1 anymore, because their style is mega high resource AWPer, who has to be the best player in the server. If they're even, like you're saying with the Falcons one, if they're even just your third best player, they're actually probably a waste of resources, even if they're my mates and I love them. Like, you just ain't that guy anymore, mate. It's why if you play that sort of all-in style where you have to have everything given to you, you've got to then deliver. You have to have the responsibility to actually carry the game after that. So I'm sort of against you on this one. Like, I know what you mean, Cassad. Like, if it really was like TSM, if we're saying if we chuck him on TSM, would TSM be better? Maybe. My issue is, though, I don't think essentially, I know it's not a sexy counter narrative, but I don't think Coldzera can ever be in one of the best teams in the world again, personally. And that actually kills me, by the way, because I do think when he was at his peak, if he justified all the resources, I do think he was an incredible carry with the resources. I think he's actually underrated at this point in history. Like, when people have these discussions that we have every bloody 3 weeks about Zewu, I want to go like, mate, did you ever see Coldzera play? He was pretty fucking amazing. Like, his game was so well-rounded. He had no flaws. If you just gave him the resource, he carried every time. What's my main critique of Zewu? Sometimes he has it all, and then he has an off game. Like, Coldzera, when he was in his prime, never had an off game, mate. That's what was impossible at this guy. If anything, he's probably underrated in history now. Like, people, dude, people don't even put his name in the GOAT convo. Like, look, I wouldn't pick him as my GOAT, but he at least gets to be in the convo, then eliminated. You know what I mean? Like, he should be one of the first five names out of your fucking mouth. This guy was a monster.
The thing is, like, what I said multiple times back in 2020 as well, he failed to adapt. That's the thing. He failed to adapt. He failed to accept the fact that he's not the same player that he was 4 years ago. If he did that, the master of that skill was fucking Apex. He was good and then he was bad and then he embraced the IGL role. He did it well and look where he is now, in the best team in the world, right? And absolutely deserved to be there because he adapted to what the fuck was going on with CS and his own game. If Coldzera did that, he would still be on the top team.
100%. If he doesn't need to be the main guy, if he doesn't need to be the superstar, let a young kid coming up be the superstar. You be the mentor to that kid. You be the semi-support role, but still fucking sharp and deliver numbers when people come at you, at your site, and you need to go into the site and trade the people that needs to be traded. Use your experience when you are in a situation where you need to close down one-on-one or one-on-two because you still have it. That's how you stay relevant. But he decided to go the other route. That's why I think he maybe needs to rethink where he wants to go before CS2 comes in. And maybe if he gets a year and a year and a half, you know, coming into the new version of the game, and maybe kind of not really, like you said, you reinvent yourself. You can't reinvent yourself just by grasping for a role to get a new contract, right? That's garbage. That's like putting a boxing gloves and hoping that and thinking that you are a fucking heavyweight boxer. You just go into the fucking ring with these fucking guys and you get knocked out immediately. You're not the fucking
like
boxer.
By the way, it actually bums me out that Cold Zero is like irrelevant player now. Like, what I could have foreseen is if he could have like figured out a way, ego and attitude wise, to adapt his game, dude, he could have done what Naf's done. Naf essentially Absolutely. Plays that style without any resources, just mega at it. Like, Cold Zero could have been like that, where you, because I always tell Naf, I've told him in the interview, I told him privately, I think you've mastered your game, mate. Like, you've sort of found your niche. You don't play like a selfish style, but you always contribute and add value. And then certain things like the 1vx, you're just one of the best ever at. Like, Cold Zero could have fit that skill set to a T. He could still be around now. He could even be doing what Shox did at the end of Vitality. He could be there just to win the bloody clutch rounds. You just win us a couple every game. Like, the guy had that aspect of his mind, was mega for the game. It's just like I say, the stories I hear, like, people don't want to believe it, because it's like Michael Jordan. When you are the best, if you have egotistical stories, they sound funny, don't they? They sound baller. The problem is those same stories, when the guy isn't good anymore, they just become sad. And I've heard too many, yeah, unfortunately. You know?
The sad thing, he wasn't really against, like, moving to Europe. He wasn't against moving to NA. He wasn't against international lineups. He was just against himself. That's the part.
Do we have one more take, Maui? Do you have one more?
I kind of incorporated it to my last thing about NIP, so not really.
I've got one more for you. I'm going to phrase it carefully. And I think this is a hot take, because I actually do think this player gets even, like, I don't think he gets flamed much by analysts, but I feel like fans are way too casual. They're always against this player. I'll phrase it very carefully, because I'm probably going to do a video on this topic soon. The phrasing goes like this. After seeing his career thus far, which, by the way, if people don't know, this guy was playing in like 2018, 2019 too. Blame F cannot possibly be, in any context, a bad, average, below par. I don't know if he's actually a true star. That's what I'm actually going to investigate in my video. But, like, he cannot be a bad player and he cannot be selfish. And the reason I say that is this. One thing I think is a really stupid set of principles that everyone just accepts as a given is, you know, that classic line people always said about, like, Simple's teammates, where they go, well, there's only so many kills in the game. It's like, do you not even know arithmetic? Like, there's 5 kills every round in theory, and you're not winning 16-0. So you're already at, like, what, 100 and... I think it'd be like 125 or something if you played like a 16-9 game. What are you talking about? Like, it's not like he dropped 80 and there was 40 left for us all. Like, even a 40 bomb, which is insane, there's loads of kills left. Like, that whole thing, in my opinion, is one of those, like, that's like, it's almost like sophistry. It sounds like it makes sense until you think about it. It doesn't really make any sense at all. Like, absolutely. Unless, like, 3 of your teammates score 28 kills each, there are kills available every game for every player in every role, minus the odd game where you're the B anchor CT Mirage rotator and they just go A every single round and then all your teammates die. Maybe in that game you cannot find a kill or an opportunity, but if you're a normal player, there are. So the reason I bring this up is because people are doing this thing, which I'm going to use an extreme example because you're going to think, oh, but that guy was legit. This reminds me of how they used to critique Device. When Device hadn't won majors, people said shit like, all he does is kill the anti-ecos. He is just saving all the time. He's just getting exit kills. And I always used to tell people, how many fucking exit kills are in these games? You can't average like 30 frags a game with exit. What are you talking about? Like, what sort of insane conspiracy theory are you on, where it's almost like in American sports where, you know, if you hit certain like stats, you unlock your bonus, and sometimes they cynically like pad rebounds to get the bonus. That doesn't exist in Counter-Strike, guys. So my problem is, I'm gonna do a solo video. I'm actually gonna explore how good is he. I'm gonna actually like put my balls on the table on that one. But essentially, I'll tell you right now from what I've seen, he cannot be a bad player. Like, you cannot produce at the level he, and think about this as well. He's done it in all scenarios, guys. He did it when he was the IGL of Call with a sus lineup. Then he did it when he was on the one when Glaive and him and Config were there. Then he did it when Config was kicked and Device came back and Glaive was the IGL. And now he's doing it as the IGL without Glaive. So in all scenarios, mate, it doesn't matter. Essentially, I actually believe this is how I know this guy's a good player. He is plug and play. Now, it's true, you have to play around him, but you could drop this guy into any team, in my opinion. He could play his style and he would produce numbers. I don't know how much you'd win. Like, I don't think it's an incredibly high impact style. I'm not going to go that far, but I don't think you, like, I think essentially this guy is undervalued for the production that he provides. Like, if I tell you as a coach, Kassad, like, obviously I'm going to give you all the pieces as well, but I've got this guy who's a lurker. He's got a bit of a defensive mentality, but he always gives you numbers. Mate, I can use that. You can fucking get cooking with that. That's something you can do with a team. There's plenty of teams out there where production's actually the problem. Like, put it this way, that new TSM lineup we're talking about, it has a bunch of good players. Where the fuck are the frags going to come from? Where's my reliable 20 kills? It isn't there really, right? It's like, they're all like role players. So, come on then. Is someone going to push back against me on this one?
Yes, absolutely.
You blame F-Hater? Come on.
I'm not a hater. The thing is, like, is he a bad player? No, he's not a bad player. But I would take Neff any day of the week before blame. Any day, I would take JKS before playing. You're mentioning exit kills, but they're not only exit kills; they're eco kills. Did you see the graphic that somebody made on Twitter? I can't remember who. Where like the number of eco kills, you know, disparity between the players is just crazy. That BlameF is just way up there with Neko.
That sounds like a skill. Because one, notice you just said Neko there. Mate, where do you fight? Well, you go in a game and all you have to do with it, Kassad, is avoid all real fights. Just farm eco kills. Mate, they don't just fucking spawn and run into you like Zergs.
Yeah,
like,
but you have to fight your weapon. And you have flashes and support grenades. Yeah, they're sitting against
here's my problem. Every fan of every team that isn't top three right now is constantly complaining, oh, we lost to bloody Pistols again. Tell you what, mate, with Device and BlameF, you never lose to Pistols.
Lose to Deagles. You lose to 5-7s. Okay. You lose to CZs. Just watch your games. Just watch the games where he enters against Glocks, against USPs, and compare it with Deagles, CZs, then compare it to rifles. He never goes in with rifles, very, very rarely. Those are the eco kills, those are the exit kills, but he saves exit kills. And not mentioning the kills where they win the round and chase people down. Like, for example, you win a round on B, and then he's going to short and catch somebody crossing on A side and kills him, or somebody kills his mate and he trades that kill, or something like that. Let's talk about the high impact. It's so easy to counter. Like if you play Astralis right now on Mirage and they do a mid default and they finish B, my advice to my connector player is like, do not fucking move until you see the C4 or until BlameF goes through connector and tries to flank you. BlameF is never going with a group where he has a rifle. BlameF is never going with the group when they have like a slow default into an A take. He's always on the other side 100% of the times, the same way Getrai did it, the same way Happy did it, the same way Bunch of Robs is doing it right now. Never ever with the group. That's the counter. You just wait, he's going to come in. What pisses me off with BlameF is the fact that he's sharper as a fucking player than 95% of the players out there. And instead of mixing, he makes it more versatile and harder to counter. He keeps doing the same thing, the same thing, the same thing. And that's, at the end of the day, it's going to hurt you more than it's going to benefit you. I don't care about your 20 frags if there is only 6 high impact kills and 7 fucking exit frags and then 7 more or 6 more eco frags. That doesn't fucking make any difference to me whatsoever. Yes, some of them will come against Deagles as well, but overall, when in the big sample, I don't think it's getting you like what you need to do. That's why I would take Robs. That's why I would take JKS. That's why I would take Neff.
before all of them, because I know that he's going to switch up his rotations. I never see Blamef over-rotate on the other side, on the CT side, to help out and, you know, kind of reinforce the side. He's always trying to sneak in somewhere behind someone. Look at Nev's game, how he reinforces the sides when he reads the round properly. And look at the other players as well. That's their value. That's their impact. Nev is going to finish the map with 13 kills, 12 of them high impact. Blamef is going to finish with 25 kills with 10 high impact kills, you know, or maybe even less than that. So overall, with your take, Blamef is a super sharp player. He's an intelligent player. He is a hardworking player. We all know that. He is just not using 100% of his capabilities to fuck with the opponents. He's making himself easy to read. And if there was any good coaches out there and any good coaching staffs out there that can counter this thing, he would be, his efficiency would be decreased by 50%, to say the least. So his
the only problem is that last thing you just said there did so much heavy lifting. Like, one, when you were saying that, like, it's so easily countered, mate. So is fucking James playing style, and none of them do it. They all play like, what the hell? He's just saving all the time. Say, yes, look at the name on the scoreboard, dickhead. Well, first of all, there are no coaches. Like, they all, everyone just plays into everyone's fucking weaknesses and strengths anyway. And then secondly, when you say that, the problem is people are doing this thing from 1.6, which doesn't exist in CSGO. In 1.6, if five Glocks rush you and you're far enough back with an M4, you get the spray down, you kill three or four at least, and essentially that's why we don't count those kills. Those are eco kills. In the modern day, almost no one's ever actually rushing with five Glocks. They're gonna have like a P250, a Deagle, a CZ, one guy has body armor, someone has a smoke, a flash. Like, dude, those cleanups are way harder. Like, those ones actually can shore your economy up like a motherfucker. And then secondly, even what you were saying there about chasing people down, mate, if I have someone who can reliably chase, I think that has value. I see people chase people all the time and just bleed three guns and not even get their gun. Like, people, there's a lot of areas where people are really inefficient CS. So, like, you're basically arguing, could he be a better player and would you change? Yeah, obviously. I'm saying, like, when people say he sucks or he's not doing anything, he is. He's not, I don't think he's high impact, but essentially he cannot be a bad player in my opinion. That's my take.
He doesn't suck. He's not a bad player. No. I got you there. He's not a bad player. He doesn't suck. He brings a lot of numbers, but I think he uses 70% of his capabilities.
That's fair. Yeah.
He doesn't understand himself how good he can be and how much more value he can bring by avoiding some of these lurks. Sacrifice five fucking eco frags.
Sure.
Sacrifice a couple of saves. Sacrifice that, those numbers, and you're going to bring Astralis more value than doing that. Yes. That's hard to do because that's your nature. I understand.
Yeah, yeah. No, I also do agree, by the way, as a general rule, anyone who has an incredibly defined one-dimensional playing style, just like Cassard says, even if you want to do it and you're good at it, you have to every now and then keep the opponent honest by doing the opposite. Like, it is what destroyed people like Happy's game. It's like, cause, like you said, you're never the one who goes in with the entry pack. If we see you, we know you weren't there. We now know what the whole round is. Like, you have to even do it, even though it's going to be hard, because it's going to be, like, the wrong call for you in this round. You have to do it every now and then, I agree, just to keep sort of like keep them guessing, right?
If you want to do it like with the lurk, let's say the A hit on Mirage, instead of lurking from connector, linger around the holes behind your holes player. You do the hit, they go ramp, they go holes, trade, whatever. They're going to expect you in connector because you threw something that in the beginning of the round, but you stay in holes. Stay in holes as the dead player. They're not going to expect you there. Change up a little bit. Be a lurker, but change it up a little bit. Maybe on the other side, you be more aggressive lurk, so they're afraid of you coming out of the B holes and killing the short player before everything happens. Like, those type of things that he can improve on and be way more dangerous than he is right now.
Sure.
Right now, he's a fucking menace. He's annoying as fuck to play against, but he can be even more annoying with the proper, you know, slightly adjustments. That's my point.
He's not, by the way, the other thing on this one as well is, if you notice, I'm essentially doing a counter narrative, because what actually annoys me is I used to be the guy who always say he was overrated when he would just put up the numbers in call and all the plebs did think he was like a top 10 player in there. And then I was like, whoa, come on, calm down. Like, that, like, you're actually not seeing that some of this is like not high impact. Where's Maui on this one? I want to know where you're at on this, Maui.
Well,
I think it's a tricky one personally. So where you at?
Well, I was trying to say, like, you're original point, if you're just looking at fans and what they're saying, then there are too many people that
And even some people that I wouldn't consider like analysts or pundits, but people that have personalities and platforms in this space that do talk about BlameF, I do see that there is an unnecessary amount of hatred for how BlameF plays the game. And what's interesting about it is, like, I feel like these same people weren't calling out for Rops's head, even though they have such similar styles. So I don't know what it is about BlameF's persona that has made so many people just gravitate towards him. It's probably, honestly, it's probably just how he looks. Like, people would rather, like, see the dude that looks like the schoolyard bully.
He's like the 80s bully in a villain. Like,
yeah, this guy bullied me in middle school and high school, so I want to get back at him by saying his game sucked. But then Rops got this more meek persona and personality. So it's like, oh, he's one of us. Like, leave him alone. It's the same with Simple and Zywoo fans completely, actually. But the thing is that in terms of, like, undervalued in terms of pay, I can say with certainty with what he was getting on Complexity, he is not undervalued. Like, he was getting so much money with that roster that there's no way that I would say, like, from a GM standpoint, that people are undervaluing him. I think BlameF is fantastic. And that stat that you brought up way earlier, Kassad, about the fact that BlameF does get a lot of his kills on eco rounds, that was Vu that published that on Twitter. And he also, just to throw it in your face a little bit, Nico has the highest percentage of his kills against pistols of any player. So in that same study. So Nico's the one that of his, it's like total number of eco kills, BlameF is getting more, but in terms of total percentage, in terms of all their kills, Nico's getting the most eco.
By the way, I actually think that is impressive because they're riflers, guys. Like, if you're rifling, you take down all the ecos. Mate, that's mad valuable. I get it when the AWPer does. We all know that if you're a million miles back, you can get three easy kills. To do that consistently as a rifler is really hard.
But also the thing is that I don't think any of these people are bad for doing this. Because of what you've kind of already brought up, Thorin, that it's like, traversing a seat, like, when you're on T side and you have to try to take space against a bunch of 5.7s and deagles, like, it's like you're sweeping a minefield. There's so many booby traps that people have for you now. So if you're able to consistently take down eco kills, I'm okay with that. Like, I don't think that's like as shameless. I have seen BlameF more than other players, though, just as soon as he hears that single USP fire or Glock, he just gets a bloodlust and he'll just sprint at his opponents and he will try to clean it up. That being said, I think that BlameF is, to me, a top 10 rifler without any question. I don't know how high I would put him on that list off the top of my head, but I think he's really, really good at his job. And I also would give him credit, and this is a tangent, I think he's also been calling very well for Astralis too. I think that was something that was brought into question a bit when they were first forming this lineup. It's like, okay, they're switching off Glaive, but can BlameF deliver in terms of IGLing? I think their calling's good. I'm not going to get into the bore up discussion with this team right now, but I'm a BlameF fan. I think BlameF is very, very good. But I also can't agree with Kassad in that. Could he do more? Yes. And that's kind of what I was saying about Rops. It's like, if you got all that mechanical skill, why aren't you imposing it on your opponents? And then I started having to watch myself eat. Well, I had to eat crow on some of that because I started seeing Rops lurk out a little bit more. He started going for more entries on T-side when things stopped working for his team. I wish BlameF did it more too.
Like, the analogy for me, the reference point is Jim. Like, here's the problem. If you think Jim's the best, I think you're an idiot. If you think he sucks, I think you're a mega idiot. Because the point is, it's a really complicated player with a lot of nuance. But they're both really good at their job. They're just not the best. And this is the other reason I compare them. I wouldn't play that style. I don't like that style. But I have to give, if you can sort of make it work, I'll give you credit, you know.
Yeah, just one more thing.
Yeah, go on.
It's just you said Maui that it's Nico and the eco frags. You know,
Come on.
All right, bring it.
I mean, we're gonna rename them Nico frags from now on, aren't we? You know, Nikos, getting some Nikos in. You know,
I can't let it go. The thing is, like, yes, he's up there with pistol frags. But then you said, like, when BlameF hears a pistol sound, he charges in, right? So what does Nico do when he hears an AK sound or an M4 sound? And what does BlameF do when he hears an M4 or an AK sound? Who goes in and who goes back? That's the difference between a superstar and not a superstar.
Okay.
So his eco frags are justified and these ones are.
I like that. Whatever. We'll just end on that because it's just such a ridiculous thought. Like, just end on that. That can be the end thought.